I'm Andy Borowitz, in for Leonard Lopate at WNYC and WNYC.org. In 2009, Solyndra, a California-based producer of solar power, received a $527 million loan from the federal government. Well, last month, the company declared bankruptcy. On today's backstory, Lisa Marganelli, the director of the Energy Policy Initiative at the New America Foundation, discusses what lessons we can learn from the Solyndra bankruptcy about how to invest in green technology. And I am pleased to welcome her back to the Leonard Lopate Show. Lisa, are you there with us?
I certainly am.
You're in Oakland, is that where you are?
Yep, Oakland, California.
Well, you know, the Solyndra business has been in the news quite a bit lately, and this does deserve a backstory segment, because we hear about Solyndra and something that went wrong and what did go wrong. I guess we want to know. You know, President Obama, I guess, had visited Solyndra last year and sort of anointed it. Was that part of his effort to highlight the solar technology?
Definitely. It was part of his effort to highlight what was kind of sort of a backdoor strategy for jump-starting a green economy, which is that they used stimulus funding to kind of work on an energy policy, because I guess they didn't feel that there was the sort of consensus to go forward with a broad green energy project all across the country, and they also didn't feel that they were likely to pass that greenhouse gas bill or any of the greenhouse gas bills that were in place. So we kind of went at it piecemeal, which was actually what the Bush administration had done. They set up a program to give massive tax credits for ethanol and biodiesel. We had this, so we had this kind of jerry-rigged system. And the loan to Solyndra was one of many loans that the Department of Energy made. I have to say, as far as I understand, it wasn't actually a direct loan. It was a loan guarantee, things to learn from Solyndra is it's a system when the federal government acts as a guarantor for loans. Another bank actually makes the loan, and they stand to make the money back when the company repays the loan. But if the company fails to repay the loan, the taxpayers make up the entire loss. So you take the risk away from the bank, and you take a lot of the risk away from the borrower, and you put it all on the taxpayer. And this is one of the problems with the Title 17 loan program, which had many people had talked about what a problem it was. It also works part of that DOE slate of loans is more than $8 billion to a nuclear power plant. So it's not all strictly what we would characterize as green. But these loans are complicated because the taxpayer doesn't stand to gain very much if they get the money back. The gains go to somebody else, but they take all the risk. And that, I think, is a significant problem. The other thing that happens with Solyndra, and this is a little funny, you know, when the problem started happening with Solyndra, I said, I haven't really heard that much about Solyndra. Why haven't I? And part of the thing is that for companies like Solyndra, when they're competing for government dollars and when there's a lot of government dollars like this in the back end, the loan guarantees, they put a lot of their effort into lobbying Washington and not that much into lobbying consumers. So Solyndra was actually selling a consumer product, but I didn't know about it. But Washington policymakers knew a lot about them because they'd spent a lot of time lobbying Washington.
Wasn't that a
problem? Both on the right and the left. I mean, they had Democratic and Republican supporters and had done very well under the Bush administration.
Well, you know, I'm not exactly a business expert, but isn't it a problem if you're making a consumer product and consumers don't know about it? Because aren't they ultimately the people who are going to have to consume it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah. I would say, I mean, one of the problems with these big government loan programs is that you change the focus of the company from pursuing the consumer towards pursuing the government because you can get a huge amount of money from the government. This was a company that in 2009 had only $6 million in sales, and we gave them $500 million in loans.
So this is almost like, you know, investing in some kind of, you know, dot-com or tech company where you just hear, oh, this is going to be amazing, but there's very little track record at all in terms of actually producing something that people have demonstrated they want to buy.
Yeah, well, Solyndra is interesting. If you, they made these solar panels that were light, and they were a completely, radically different design than the photovoltaic panels that are made of thin slices of silicone crystals. So they were more expensive, but they were much lighter, and they didn't have the pollution issues that PV panels have. And so you could potentially put them on the top of big box stores or in big installations, and they wouldn't weigh down your roof. They might have lasted longer. I'm not clear on that. They probably possibly polluted less. You know, one of the issues with the whole loan program is it's not very transparent. And if the government's going to make loans, we all ought to be able to sort of go to a web page and see, this is why we backed this technology. And obviously we can't. We don't know that they were, 88% less polluting and had a shelf life, had a roof life of 42% longer than regular PV panels. We don't know any of that. But there was obviously, there was a certain amount of thinking behind the bet that this was a kind of a breakthrough technology. But I think that there's the other problem is the whole Silicon Valley ethos of designing a killer app is totally different than designing something that's going to compete with traditional power plants and pipelines that have been in the ground for 100 years. So it's a little complicated.
Well,
but if I could like run back time and it was 2009, I would look at what the Department of Defense did over many years of the Cold War, where they worked closely with suppliers by providing them with a market rather than a guaranteed market and asking them for upgrades. So this is how we got really good turbojet engines. It's how we got computer chips and circuitry. It's how we got these sort of long-term incremental improvements in breakthrough technology. What I would do is I would say to them, look, Department of Defense is going to put your panels on its roof, and we're going to try them out, and you have a guaranteed contract with us for, say, 5 years, but we need improvements every year based on the feedback that we give you, so that you set up this sort of long-term relationship where you're putting pressure on them as a consumer to refine their product and get and then, then maybe they can grow their $6 million consumer business to $8 million and $10 million and $12 million, like a normal business, rather than supposedly exploding up to $120 million in the course of 2 years, which is what they were telling people they were going to do.
Well, let's say that you do start with, say, the Defense Department, and that works out well, and you do upgrades, and that's all going swimmingly. Ultimately, where is the market for green technology? Is it here? Is it more in abroad in Europe? Who's buying this stuff?
Well, some of it's being bought in the U.S. There's actually standing orders right now for 25 gigawatts worth of power of solar power installation in the U.S., which is just jaw-dropping, actually. That's the equivalent of 25 nuclear plants. It doesn't actually produce anywhere near as much power as 25 nuclear plants. It's probably going to produce as much power as off the top of my head, maybe 5, 6, 7 nuclear plants, something like that, because solar only works part of the day. But it's a stunning amount of solar that's expected to be installed. And the market for this eventually will be worldwide, because by 2035 we're going to need 50% more power, a lot for India and China. I think if the U.S. wants to have a manufacturing sector, which I think we need, I think we should have, we need to think about how we can take our strengths and use them to grow more green power here, to grow more green jobs, and really to save money and save carbon and save pollution. Because what we're really talking about with green is avoiding the costs that are inherent in our sort of fossil fuel-dependent system right now.
This is Andy Borowitz. I'm in today for Leonard Lopate, and I'm talking to Lisa Marganelli, the director of the Energy Policy Initiative at the New American Foundation. We're talking about the bankruptcy of Solyndra. Now, first of all, let me define bankruptcy for a minute. This is like there's bankruptcy and there's bankruptcy. Is Solyndra out of business? Is it never going to rise again?
Solyndra, as it stands, is out of business. It may be bought. One of the things that has happened in the past with U.S. companies that were very dependent upon upon subsidies or tariffs or some sort of a government expectation that wasn't steady, is that taxpayers have put money into them, they've gone bankrupt, and they've been bought by foreign companies. This happened with the California wind industry to a certain extent. It happened with some of our solar industry before that it went to Japan and other places after that kind of went bust in the early 80s. So, yes, it's quite possible that it'll be bought by somebody here or bought by a foreign company. Apparently in the later stages of deal-making with Solyndra, as it became clear that they needed refinancing, the Department of Energy got some of the intellectual copyright for the, whatever is in these tubes that Solyndra produces.
Now Solyndra is not the only solar energy company that's gone under recently. There have been some others, correct?
Yeah, tons of them. Well, not tons, but a whole bunch went. Sorry.
Let's define our terms here.
Several of them went under in August alone, because the price of solar panels dropped by something like 30 or 40%. In fact, many of the Chinese solar panel makers who were largely responsible for the fall in the price of silicon panels are struggling. One of them had 18% profits last year, and now they've got 2.2. So what's happened is the Chinese government has set up a program to drive the installation of panels at home in China. So they've switched from fostering the producers to fostering a market to keep the producers in business.
But the drop in prices of the panels, that might actually be a good thing, right? Because wouldn't that make solar power more affordable to consumers? Or?
Right. It's a good thing. Well, you know, here's the thing. It's like we as citizens of the U.S. have not made up our mind whether we prefer cheap prices or whether we prefer jobs at home. And, you know, on the one hand, we can have cheap prices by buying stuff from China, but that's not going to create necessarily jobs at home other than for the installation. And, you know, this is kind of I don't know if it's a rethinking, but this is this giant hesitancy that's running all through the economy right now of who are we and what do we actually believe in? Do we believe in globalization, or do we want to slap some old-fashioned tariffs on and suffer for that? Do we believe in low prices, or do we believe in our own manufacturing sector? And are we going to take the steps to do that, to make that happen?
Well, this is sort of raising a larger issue that we've been talking a little bit about this week, which is the whole idea of activist government. How much should the government be getting involved? Here is a case where the government was sort of acting as a venture capitalist in a way. You know, they were stepping in and saying, we like this company, we think this company can grow, this company can produce a product that will be good for the economy, good for jobs, good for energy, our energy future. Is this wasn't actually a very good pick in the final analysis. Solyndra was the wrong horse. Does that suggest to you that maybe we need to think smarter about what we're picking, or should we be getting out of the venture capital business? Is that something we're not good at in the federal government?
My feeling is that first of all, in the U.S., we have a venture capital system that's the envy of the world. And
thank God we have something that's the envy of the world. That's the best news I've heard all day.
Yeah, but have you ever talked to a venture capitalist? I mean, they're very rational, but they're kind of wound up. These are people who like to win, and they have different metabolisms than we do. And they are.
You can say whatever you want about venture capitalists. They're not listening to this show. They're doing something else.
They're over making money and driving fast cars.
Exactly.
On the West Coast. And what they do is they place very strategic bets with the possibility of winning big and losing big. And the winning big matters to them, and the losing big matters a lot to them. What happens when you have government bureaucrats making bets is that the winning isn't necessarily going to benefit them. And they can't necessarily carefully calculate what it's going to be. And apparently they'd rather not think too much about the losing. So they just have a different set of values, kind of. They don't have any skin in the game. They're not going to lose that money themselves. And that's a totally different calculation than with a venture capitalist who's going to lose that money. So I would say don't duplicate what the venture capitalists do. Do what our government does well. We've done very good work in investing in basic research over the years. There are a lot of different ways to do that, a lot of sort of developing models. We've also done a good job of figuring out how to make markets work. Our whole post-war boom in housing and appliances and all of that sort of stuff was partly driven by the GI Bill of helping people purchase stuff. We've had years and years of thinking about making markets for things, right down to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and these sort of guarantors of housing mortgages. I think that we know a lot about helping consumers, and then we let the consumers make the choices in the market so that the better stuff comes out. And we need to actually kind of take these positive things that we know how to do, and also things like the what we've done with the Defense Department and purchasing and fostering really dramatic changes in technology. We need to do those things, and we need to do the stuff that we do well, and we might need to do some other things, but we certainly can never outspend China on creating jobs, because China has to create those jobs. China's leadership needs to create jobs for the equivalent of the population of Australia every single year to keep kind of social stability. And at the same time, another component of social stability for them, which is really their hold on power, is cutting pollution and making sure there's a steady supply of energy. So for them, investing in jobs in green stuff is a quadruple, sextuple win. And there's every reason to make those bets. But for us as taxpayers, I think that we need to proceed cautiously. We need to be sure that we get the stuff that we want. And we also really need to rethink how we really need to rethink whether we really believe that price is the biggest issue in the things that we buy, and whether we want to have manufacturing in this country.
Well, when you talk about China really has a reason to create jobs, and you were describing the position they're in, their hold on power and everything depends on their ability to create new jobs, that actually started sounding a lot like America to me. I mean, I think jobs is, when you're at 9% unemployment, and that's a number that's really understated, because it doesn't include all the people who are underemployed or have given up looking for work. And you have, a government which both parties right now are suffering really terrible approval ratings. Isn't it time that jobs become a big issue, that renewable energy jobs, this whole sector, actually receive a little more, move up to the front burner, a little higher priority?
I think so. And I think also there are some other jobs programs. Today, I think there's discussion of one to kind of revamp America's schools that would put a lot of people to work pretty quickly. I think that those are all things to talk about. But really, we can't spend our way into cutting-edge green jobs in a one-for-one basis. I mean, if you look at, there were 1,000 jobs at Solyndra, and we gave them a loan of $500 million. I mean, we could have, that's $500,000 a job that we gave them, and they got other money in addition. So if we just gave, 1,000 workers $500,000 and said, I don't know, go plant trees, I mean, we would come out ahead in terms of carbon emissions. And we need to think of, you need to think more thoughtfully about, on the one hand, betting on a technology, and on the other hand, building a whole sector. I think jobs are really crucial. I think that our energy costs are shocking. This year, we're going to spend about $500 billion on gasoline. That's not diesel or heating oil. That's just gasoline at the pump. That's $100 billion more than we spent last year. So that's the difference in prices between this year and last year. That's like a stimulus program running backwards. I mean, that's just sucking money, disposable income, out of people's pockets. And, I've talked to people who stopped buying their asthma medicine so they could buy the gas to get to work, and then they ended up in the ER two times. So here we have gas prices raising healthcare costs. our problems with energy and our problems with the price of energy are really big, and we need to think about them really systemically.
Well, that was the most depressing anecdote anyone has ever told me, so thank you for sharing that with me. I have to ask you, we're talking about all this green technology, and certainly Obama, the White House, has been talking about it, but At the same time that they're talking about that, they're also talking about building this big pipeline for more oil. I mean, how much are hydrocarbons going to be a part of our sort of energy strategy going, our energy mix going forward?
Well, I'm sorry to say that they're going to be a part of it until we start cutting them down,
right.
You know, until we start really pulling back on it. We could really, use 27% more energy for every dollar of GDP than Europe or Japan. That's a real competitive disadvantage for us, and we really need to address it. We should really work on cutting back the consumption, the demand for these fuels, and try to make our economy work more efficiently, more up to more like a European economy rather than, say, Russia or somewhere like that. So we really need to increase our energy efficiency. We really need to obviously to create jobs, and we need to reduce this giant drain of the fossil fuels on our economy. But the other problem is that we need to also recognize that we probably should be paying more for some of this energy. One of the issues with green energy is that we subsidize nuclear, we subsidize coal, we subsidize all of these energy forms. We subsidize nuclear very directly. About 140% of the value of every kilowatt we buy is actually a taxpayer subsidy. And then with coal and other utilities, that's in a regulated environment, they have a kind of cost structure built around delivering us cheap electricity. And they don't run like normal businesses. So we've created these two very superficially very cheap kinds of power that are actually, in fact, quite expensive in terms of emissions, in terms of healthcare costs to deal with the emissions, or in terms of the number of subsidies that we're giving them in the case of nuclear. And then we expect green technologies to compete with them, and then we say, ha ha, it can't compete. But it's because we have this wacky subsidy structure that runs all through our sense of what we need to pay for energy, up to the point where a presidential candidate like Michelle Bachmann can promise $2 gasoline,
right,
knowing full well that she can't deliver it, but understanding that people really want to hear that. That's what we Americans think the right price is for gasoline. And when you do polling of people, they will say unequivocally that they're sure that a price over $2 a gallon is the result of manipulation by the oil companies or a fraud perpetrated by environmentalists who refuse to allow drilling. Nah, it's kind of created in this wild world market that's a mixture of things. We kind of have to get the sense that energy is a right and it's cheap out of our heads, and
right,
start to get to work on the actual problem.
Well, I guess if I want to hear some good news, I'm just going to have Michelle Bachmann on. So I guess that's what
you
I've learned.
I've been
speaking with Lisa Marganelli. She's the director of the Energy Policy Initiative at the New America Foundation. And we've been talking about the scandal surrounding the bankruptcy of the solar company Solyndra. And I guess what it can teach us about how best to invest in green technology in the future. Lisa, thank you for joining us for today's first Backstory segment. Take it easy.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.